Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by The Shadow. Does he really know?
The Shadow knows.
I will take your word for it. Today's FFM is all about acting and not much more. But I think you're going to enjoy it. It is titled The Bookcase. Hey, I don't name these things.
11:30. Sure, Mr. Ronald, hadn't I better make you a cup of chocolate?
No, thanks, Mrs. Bland. Father's working rather late tonight, isn't he?
In that stuffy old library, too. Suspect I'd better pour in a little extra for that butler of yours, Mr. Bowling.
No, Mrs. Bland. Well, you say that makes one think...
What's that?
Sounded like a truck backfiring out of the road.
Oh, no, Mr. Ronald. It was in this house.
A gunshot? Mrs. Bland, come on.
Mr. Ronald, look. They're on the floor.
Why, it's Bowling. He's unconscious. Mrs. Bland, turn on the lights. Bowling, old man. Bowling.
Why, he's been struck on the head, Mr. Ronald. Look.
Someone hit me from behind you. Mr. Ronald, your father in the library.
Mr. Ronald, quick.
Oh, Mrs. Bland.
Your father. Fallen forward on his desk. Mr. Ronald, is he?
Yes. He's dead. Mrs. Bland, call the police. This is murder. Tell the inspector whatever he wants to know, Bowling. We've got to find out who murdered my father.
Yes, sir. Well, I was locking the front door when I first heard the voices from the library. I was surprised because I didn't know Mr. Sweeting had a visitor, but just as I approached the library door...
Go on, Mr. Bowling.
Well, sir, I heard the shot. For a moment, I was confused. Then I opened the door, and Mr. Sweeting was lying forward over his desk, a bullet wound in his temple. I saw a piece of paper caught in his hand, sir, and then a tingling sensation of fear flashed up my spine. I knew I wasn't alone, sir. I didn't see anyone, but I realized the murderer was there, and it flashed through my mind that he was waiting till he could get hold of that piece of paper.
Did you take it, Bowling?
I did, sir. That is, I slipped it into a book that was on the desk.
But there's no book. Book here on the desk.
I must have taken it after all. I even remember the title of the book, sir. It was The Widow's Walk, and I slipped the paper between pages 77 and 78. But just as I did...
Yes?
The murderer darted out the door behind me. I whirled and ran after him. The next thing I knew, something struck me over the head.
No, Bowling, you're wrong. Hold out your hands. I arrest you for the murder of your employer, Mr. Sweeting.
What was the one clue that told the inspector Bowling was the guilty man? In just a moment, you'll hear the inspector explain. But first...
Okay, Miss Bland and Mr. Ronald are not guilty. That I am sure of. However, the butler's story seems pretty good. I mean, he had me with a tingling sensation down his spine. I could feel it. A solid piece of acting there. But something is wrong because the detective wasn't impressed by it at all. Did you catch something that I missed? Let's head back and hear what the detective has to say.
Now, let's see if your talent for detecting is as good as the inspector's.
But how did you know Bowling killed my father, Inspector?
He didn't say anything, far as I can see.
Yes, he did, Mrs. Bland. Striking himself on the head was almost enough to make the whole thing plausible. But he said one thing that told me he was lying. You see, it's impossible to insert anything between pages 77 and 78 in a book, because odd-numbered pages are always on the right, even ones on the left. 77 and 78 are actually the same sheet. It just can't be done.
Silly. Nothing but silliness. It was the page thing that did the butler in? Come on now. We need more than that. Also, what's up with the organist in the background on this one? Has he played this background music so many times now that he thought he might snap it up a bit? Stop it!
Is that you say?
Welcome to the podcast. On the show today, we have some stories about Bigfoot.
There's no Bigfoot.
Not everyone agrees with you. We have Bigfoot gone fishing, Bigfoot out for a walk, and Lowell throws stones at Bigfoot.
Bigfoot? He's real?
Apparently so. Also today, the Shadow returns to the lineup with an adventure at an underground river.
The Shadow knows.
You already said that today. We end the show with a short one from the pages of Analog Magazine.
Is it good?
It is. I received this email from Black Windows. Hey Ron, love your show, but I can only find episodes up to November. Did you quit? Are you coming back? Well, I was quite shocked by this one and I had to investigate. It turns out that Black Windows uses Blueberry to listen to the show, and sure enough, it has not updated since show number 466. Now, I am not a member of that podcasting service, so I can't troubleshoot feed problems there. I have sent in a request to them to fix the feed, but they are under no obligation to do so. I have had some problems with them in the past and probably should just delete my account, but I'm not even sure that would take me off their listings. Bottom line, if you're thinking about listening to the podcast there, I would wait until I find a solution. All my other destinations are working perfectly, such as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon, Google, Radio FM, Libsyn, iHeartRadio, Podbean, and so many more. While on the subject, I'm thinking about closing my account at SoundCloud. That service is more for the music creator than the podcaster, and we only have about 35 followers there. The reason I'm thinking about this is that I've been using a free account and it has become quite limited as to what you can do with it. I've checked the stats and it's just not worth paying for their service just so I can have more than two shows available at a time. Each week I have to manually go in, delete a show to be able to automatically upload a new one. Crazy. If you are listening on SoundCloud, I would like to hear from you on this. Well, that's all I have this time. Let's get on with the show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can definitely listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? The Martian, written by Andy Weir and narrated by Will Wheaton. The first thing you should recognize is the name of the book. It was turned into a hugely successful movie in 2015, starring Matt Damon. But I'm here to tell you, the book is better. The second thing of note is the narrator. If you don't know the name Will Wheaton, then you're probably not a Star Trek fan. He played the character Wesley Crusher in Star Trek: The Next Generation. Will is a gifted narrator and does an amazing job with this story. Here's an excerpt from Will talking to The Martian's author, Andy Weir, about the project.
Hi, I'm Will Wheaton. I am the narrator of The Martian, which was written by this delightful gentleman, Andy Weir.
I'm Andy Weir, and I'm the writer of The Martian, which was narrated by this delightful gentleman, Will Wheaton.
And we're here today to talk about the delightful narration of this delightful novel. I read The Martian very, very close to publication. I feel like I got it in the first 2 weeks of it being released.
Thanks.
I have a ton of friends who work at JPL.
Oh, yeah.
And as you can imagine, it just tore through JPL. So one of my buddies who worked there, I was like, you've got to read this book. And I feel like I read it in like 2.5 days. Awesome. Like I just couldn't put it down. I want to know how you built the narrative. Did you plot the whole thing, or did you discovery write it and then backfill in places where you needed to make the science work?
Well, mostly I tried to go forward. Uh-huh. So I guess made it up as I went along is the truth.
So did you do that thing that we talk about writers doing where you're like, I'm going to keep putting my characters into terrible situations to see how they can surprise me to get out of it?
Somewhat, although really the whole book is just one long cascade failure.
Yes.
It's like this went wrong. So the way he has to survive this opens himself up to this going wrong. So the way he has to deal with that. And so that's kind of what I wanted, each problem to, you know, he comes up with a solution, but the solution kind of creates a new problem. Because you can use bad luck to get your characters into trouble like once or twice, but
sure.
He can't just keep getting just unlucky. Everything has to flow from the previous problem.
I love the moments where Mark is convinced that he has solved a big problem, and then it turns out that he didn't.
Yeah, thanks. That's just kind of my own experience with the scientific progress. I used to work when I was very young, I used to work in research and development, just as sort of a lab monkey, you know, just cleaning test tubes, that sort of thing. But it was always like, okay, we've got this figured out. No, we don't. Okay, now we're going to run this experiment. No, we can't. Okay, now finally everything's good and the power goes out. And just there's always just one more thing. It's like it's like an episode of Columbo. There's just one more thing.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
It's just always something wrong.
I have gotten to be in the creative process for a thing that I'm already a fan of. The first time was Star Trek. So I was already a fan of The Martian, that I got to bring it to life in this way was a tremendous honor. And I sincerely hope that the fans of my work and the fans of your work are gonna like it as much as I loved being part of it.
Well, thanks. I hope so too.
It was a real pleasure to talk to you today.
And you.
I am very excited for your next book to come out. And if you're looking for a narrator, I know a guy.
Okay. Well, give me his number or something.
Okay.
I'm looking to change, so. Don't cut that. Don't cut that.
If you want to hear that full interview, it is available on Audible. Now, what is The Martian about? Well, 6 days ago, astronaut Mark Watley became one of the first people to walk on Mars. Now, he's sure he'll be the first person to die there. After a dust storm nearly kills him and forces his crew to evacuate while thinking him dead, Mark finds himself stranded and completely alone with no way to even signal Earth that he's alive. And even if he could get the word out, his supplies would be gone long before a rescue could arrive. Chances are, though, he won't have to die of starvation. The damaged machinery, unforgiving environment, and plain old human error are much more likely to get him first. Will his resourcefulness be enough to overcome the impossible odds against him? You can find out today for free. Here's what Audible has set up for us. they are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. You can get the book, The Martian, for free today. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
This time we feature stories about Bigfoot. Our first one comes to us via Pennsylvania from Jake Waters. I read this one exactly as it was sent to me. Hello, Ron. I have a fishing story for you, and I hope you can use it on the show. It's a real encounter with Bigfoot, and I have to say it changed how I feel about them things. I can add more depth and character names if you want. I'm fishing at the Cadogan. It's on the Allegheny River in western Pennsylvania. So I park at the top of the ramp going down to the river. Not a boat ramp, just one of those for back and four-wheel drives down to the water. I go up and it's getting to be about twilight when I hear something coming down the hillside across from us. It's steep, but not too steep. Anyway, I hear it barreling down the hillside, but the brush is so thick and really high, better part of 12 feet. Now, I'm waiting for a black bear to hop onto the road, but it doesn't. It just stops in the middle of the last bush right beside the road. Thinking it was still a bear, I go ushering my friend and his 4-year-old daughter back down to the river. There's a bunch of rocks down there from baseball to basketball size so they can defend themselves. I'm still up at the car because I'm less than 5 feet from my door and the brush is a good 30 feet away, so I know I can make it to my car and distract them with my horn. Yet it never leaves the brush. It just shakes it violently. I stand there for about 5 minutes and I can see it's making its way back up the hill. What I didn't realize was that it was pushing trees around it. About 20 feet tall they were. I'm pretty sure I wasn't connecting anything because of my adrenaline. I never seen it. It was too dark by that point. I walk back down to the river and we're gathering our stuff. It's getting way too creepy. We were packing up and I hear a knocking coming from the hillside. I could see a group of people downriver, but they weren't near any trees. They were actually on an outcrop about 20 feet away from the tree line. The knocking was above us and slightly upriver. And even if they had reacted to it, looking around and whatnot, I decided to yell to them about the possibility of there being a bear. They said that they had heard something coming down the hillside and seen my buddy running towards the water. They thanked us for the heads up. As soon as they thanked us, a rock came flying off the hillside in between us and them. We actually seen it hit the water. They jumped as I did, because we weren't really expecting it. I turned around to see if my friend was up the hill and was just messing with us. As I turned, I saw that he was just a few feet behind me holding his daughter. Both were as white as a ghost. I guess none of us were expecting that. I decided to reach down and grab a rock and carried it with me just in case it got real. 3 more times we heard these rocks hitting the water, and I had had enough. Our site was all cleaned up, and I took it as a perfect time to retaliate. Not my best decision. I knew where the rocks were being thrown from. That darn bush up there. So, I chucked it. I knew there weren't any trees around, so I figured if I threw it, it'd probably just blow right through. But it didn't. It made a thud sound like it hit someone on their chest. And then that darn rock rolled right back towards me. I actually heard whatever I hit get the wind knocked out of it. Then the thing takes off down the road towards the other group. They started screaming, and I mean being threatened with other terror kind of scream, and start throwing whatever they could grab at it. I'm just standing there bewildered and watching them scatter. A few went into the water, and the rest ran towards me. All of a sudden, I hear one of them yell, "Get in the truck!" Now, they took off to their truck, and I mean when I say they left everything, nobody grabbed anything, and they took off. I'll never forget their screams. I ran back up the hill and humped in my car. My buddy ran up with his daughter right after they started shouting. He was crying. Now, I've known this man for 20 years, and I can count on one hand how many times I've seen him cry. I started up my car, and we hightailed it out of there. I never seen what it was, but I put everything together later that night. It's been 5 years since it happened, and I absolutely refuse to ever go back down there. It's a damn shame, too, because it's a great catfishing spot. Jake Waters from Pennsylvania. Jake, that has to be one of the coolest Bigfoot stories we've ever had on the show. As I've said before, I have a fondness for these type of stories, and I want to thank you for sharing it with us. And by the way, I don't think it needs any more depth. You are an amazing storyteller. Our next Bigfoot story comes from my own backyard. It was sent in by Rich Snyder, who lives in Pasco, Washington. Rich writes, "Hey Ron, I heard you talking about Bigfoot, and I have a story that took place a few years ago. We were out in the Pinchot National Forest. I was with a small group of friends, and all of us experienced what I'm about to tell you. On June 22, 2009, we were driving on a curvy road off Highway 14 when a large humanoid walked out of the forest. I swerved to miss it and glanced back in my rearview mirror and saw someone or something darting back into the forest. A moment later, we stopped and turned around and got a 3 to 4 second glimpse of something walking on 2 feet, about 50 feet away. He was about 7 or 8 foot tall, covered with black hair and possessing broad, muscular shoulders. A moment later, we all heard a scream that came from the area where it had disappeared. I felt nervous, confused, and excited, all at the same time. Up until this point, I thought Bigfoot to be much ado about nothing. Today, I am a believer." Rich Snyder, Pasco, Washington. Thank you, Rich. I know the area that you spoke of, and that place is Bigfoot Central. I've heard many credible stories like yours come from that area. One from a close friend who experienced nearly word for word your story. There just has to be something to all of this. There just has to be. Our last Bigfoot story comes from Lowell Rice. He writes to us from Gresham, Oregon. "Hello, Ron. Here's a story that happened a few summers ago. The year was 1963. I had to go to California with my family. I didn't want to go, but I didn't have a choice. My uncle rented us a cabin at Big Bear Lake for a week as a family Christmas present. On our last night at Big Bear, my aunt took my mother, my sister, and me to the movies in town. The movie was over around 5 p.m., and we headed back to the cabin. Once we arrived, I realized I didn't have my wallet. I asked my aunt to drive me back to the movie theater, and she refused to take me. So I decided to walk to town to see if I could find my wallet. When I arrived at the movie theater, I asked the girl at the ticket booth if I could go look for my wallet. She gave me permission to enter the theater to look, and to my surprise, I found it stuck in the seat. When I came back outside, it was dark. Something I didn't think of when I left the cabin. There was only one way back, so off I went. It was a gravel road that ran up the side of the mountain. I was walking along and I started to hear something moving on my left. It was the sound of branches snapping when you step on them. The terrain on the right side of the road was a steep hill upward, with a lot of thick trees and underbrush. On the left side of the road was a steep angle going down. There weren't any trees, but a lot of bushes and underbrush. It'd be very hard for a human to climb without slipping. That was where the sound was coming from. When I stopped, they would stop. When I started to walk again, the branches started snapping again. As kids, we always carried stones in our pockets, in case we ran into trouble. I started to lob them into the air so that they would fall on whatever was down there. Then the breaking of the branches became more ominous. When I stopped to listen this time, the thing just kept coming up the side. The road went off to the right about 20 yards ahead of me. At the speed this thing was moving, I wouldn't make it to the bend. I told myself, there's no way I'm going to let this thing get by me. I started to run. God must have been with me because a car came around the bend. I stood right in the middle of the road doing jumping jacks. It slammed on its brakes and stopped with only a foot to spare. My aunt was driving with my mother and sister in the car. They had come looking for me. I ran to the side of the car, got in, and said, "Let's go!" As we drove away, I looked out the back window, and I saw a large creature, which had to be 7 feet tall, standing in the middle of the road. I didn't tell anyone about this at that time because I was too shook up. My sister knew something was wrong just by the look on my face. I didn't tell my sister the whole story until we got back home to Oregon. Lowell Rice, Gresham, Oregon. What a great story, Lowell. I have to say, to go through that as a kid would be tough. Thank you for being part of Bigfoot Week, and thank you for your story. Our featured story this time is a good one. It comes from the OTR series, The Shadow. I was first introduced to the show in the 1990s after watching the film The Shadow, starring Alec Baldwin. I had, of course, heard the phrase, "The Shadow Knows," but I had never actually listened to one. In the 1990s, it was still difficult to find these old shows. The internet was young, so I ordered a set of CDs from this new service called eBay. When it arrived, I plugged in Volume 1, and I was hooked. After going through the 25 shows on that disc, I ordered Volume 2, and well, the rest is history. The Shadow became an OTR favorite. What we will hear today comes from the Bill Johnstone era. He and Margot find themselves facing death in a story called The Sandhog Murders, and it first aired on November 26, 1939.
Evil lurks in the hearts of men. The Shadow knows.
The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. The Shadow uses his hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice of the Shadow belongs. Today's story, Sandhog Murders. Deep under the river, knee-deep in glacial muck and slime, you'll find them, the sandhogs, working under terrible pressure. Pressure beating against their eardrums. Pressure forcing little nitrogen bubbles into their bloodstreams. Pressure that causes death. Pressure that keeps the river out of the tunnel that men are building under the river. 100 feet under the river.
Yeah. How far did we go on that last shot?
27 inches, boss.
Tighten those jacks next to the shield.
Okay,
boy. Yeah, Rodsky speaking. Time? Okay. All right, men, that's all for today. Let's go.
Okay, let's go, fellas.
Hey, Mr. Pine. Want to get left down here?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was so interested.
You better come along and get in the decompression chamber.
I hate to admit this, but
Well, I feel sick. I can hardly move my head.
Well, that's the same complaint from all visitors to our little rabbit hole. Just give me your arm.
Thank you.
There we are. Come on, come on, into the decompression chamber. Get the move on, all of you.
Oh, I'm glad this shift is over with.
Quit your beefing. You get your pay regular, don't you?
Yeah, what do you...
Okay, decompress.
Decompressing.
Mr. Pine, do you know what could happen to you if you got left behind?
No.
Ever been in a pressure tunnel before?
No, I haven't.
Well, it ain't no picnic ground, mister. You ever hear of the bends?
That's some kind of sickness, isn't it?
It ain't no reducing exercise. I'll tell the world it's sickness. You see, working in these pressure tunnels pumps you full of nitrogen bubbles. And if you was to come out of the pressure too fast, those bubbles would stop your heart quicker than a dollar watch.
Yeah, you gotta have the right kind of stomach to stand it.
You know what would happen if we opened that door now?
No, what?
We'd all pop like punctured balloons. The pressure's... You got to go down slow-like. Just now we are working under 39 pounds of pressure per square inch.
Say, are you trying to scare me?
Lay off, Jack.
You had enough trouble lately?
Hey. Something wire. The pressure's dropping too fast.
Oh, Kim.
Tell him to increase the pressure.
Too late. Increase the pressure. Help me.
Did you read the comic strips this morning?
Uh-huh.
They were very humorous. Winnie Winkle's in the hospital. Little orphan Annie's house burned down, and Andy Gump was hit by a truck.
Uh-huh.
Lamont, I wonder why they call them funny papers. Say, are you listening to me?
Uh-huh.
Listen, Mr. Cranston, you haven't paid the slightest bit of attention to anything I've said to you for the last hour.
I'm sorry, Margot, but that horrible business in the new intercity tunnel has been on my mind.
What business?
8 men were killed in the decompression chamber yesterday.
Decompression chamber?
Something evidently went wrong. Pressure was lowered too suddenly, and they all died terrible deaths.
Well, how did it happen, Lamont?
Well, they don't know. It looks pretty funny. According to the newspaper reports, the men working at the tunnel had been expecting something to happen. There had been several near accidents, and the men were pretty jittery.
Hmm. Well, you don't suppose that... Oh, Lamont, I know that look in your eye, that old crime detector look. You think that someone had something to do with that accident.
I don't know anything about that, Margot. The reason I'm upset is that Pete Stockton is an old friend of mine. I know just how he must feel to have 8 of his men killed working on his tunnel.
Pete Stockton?
Yes, the contractor. We went to school together. This intercity tunnel is the first big job he's handled alone since his father died about a year ago.
Oh, I see. And, you'd like to see him, wouldn't you?
Why, no, Margot, not today. We have a date. I wouldn't think of it.
Oh, that's just the trouble. You do think of it. So I guess we might just as well see this old schoolmate of yours.
Margot, you're wonderful. But about those men who died in the decompression chamber, Pete... How do you explain that?
I can't explain it, Lamont. There's been so much trouble around here on this job, and then to have this terrible thing happen. Well, it'll never happen to me again.
Well, what do you mean?
I'm quitting. I never wanted this tunnel work. I was just doing it for Dad's sake. Well, he's dead now. Joe Brantley and other contractors agreed to take the whole thing off my hands.
Quitting?
Yes. I couldn't stand another experience like this one. All those men left. Wives, sweethearts, and mothers. How can I ever repay them? Make up to them for their loss.
Hey, Pete. The men want to talk to you. They want to go back to work.
What, did you tell them that Brantley was taking over Monday?
I told them, but they want to work for you, not Brantley.
Well, I guess I'll have to tell them myself. Oh, by the way, this is Pop Berkey. Miss Lane.
How do you do?
Mr. Cranston.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Pop's an old-timer. He and my dad broke into the business together. Well, ask him anything you want to know about sand hogging. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Now, he's taking the whole thing pretty hard, isn't he?
Yes. I'd like to help him, Margo. He's a swell guy.
First time you two have been around the tunnel in the making?
What? Oh, yes. It's very interesting, isn't it? But is it necessary to keep everything so greasy?
Well, Mr. Berkey, What caused the accident in the decompression chamber?
Are you asking me what or who?
So you think that the accident wasn't exactly an accident?
I got my own ideas, but I'm not saying.
If you know anything, Mr. Berkey, you've got to tell me.
Well, now, supposing you were in the contracting business, and another contractor beat you out on a big job, an important job. Wouldn't you try a couple of little things to get the job back?
You call the murder of 8 men little things?
Maybe you didn't want to kill the man in the decompression chamber. Maybe you just wanted to scare them so they'd be afraid to work for your rival.
But to take a chance with men's lives...
Lady, you don't know Joe Brandley.
Joe Brandley? The man who's taking over the contract from Stockton?
Yeah. And a dirtier man would be impossible to find. He wouldn't stop at anything. Looks like he won out pretty easy, don't it? Pete's turning the contract over to him Monday.
Well, he hasn't won yet. Pop Berkey, if you see anything suspicious happening around here, I want you to call me immediately. You understand?
Right.
Come along, Margo.
We'll stop that fella, Brandley.
Margo, I think the Shadow is going to pay a call on a certain Mr. Brandley.
No. Why should I be afraid? What? Stockton is turning the job over to me? What? At the tunnel. When? Tonight. Yeah, well, let him try it. I'll be at that tunnel and settle this thing once and for all. Yeah. Thanks for the information. Goodbye.
Thank you for the information, Mr. Brandley.
What? Who spoke?
I did, Mr. Brandley.
Who are you?
I am called the Shadow.
Where are you? I can't see you.
I have willed it that you won't see me, Brandley. I've cast a mist over your mind that makes me invisible to your eyes.
What do you want of me?
I would like to know more about that phone conversation you just had. I believe it was concerned with the murders in the new intercity tunnel.
Murders? Those men were supposed to have died by accident.
Did you have anything to do with that accident, Mr. Brandley?
What are you talking about?
I'm asking you, did you have anything to do with those murders?
No, nothing.
Then who were you speaking to on the telephone?
Why should I tell you?
You'd better talk, Mr. Brandley.
You haven't got anything on me.
That's true. I can't pin anything on you just now. But let me warn you, Mr. Brandley. The Shadow intends to prevent anyone from destroying the intercity tunnel.
Who's there? Oh, it's you, Mr. Cranston. I couldn't see you in the dark.
Yes, Pop Berkey.
Oh, Lamont, thank heaven you've come.
Margot, what are you doing here at the tunnel?
Well, I was waiting for you at your apartment, Lamont, when Mr. Berkey called.
You asked me to call you if anything suspicious was going on here.
And something suspicious is going on here.
There's someone down in the tunnel, Mr. Cranston.
Yes, I know. I expected the killer would make his move tonight with the tunnel deserted. But what are you doing here, Margot?
Well, I don't know, but I didn't know how to get in touch with you, so I thought I'd see what I could do in your absence. I left a note for you at your apartment, Lamont. Oh, am I glad you've come. The very idea of going down into that empty tunnel gives me the cold chills.
Now, wait a minute, Margot. What were you expecting to do down in the tunnel?
What was I expecting to do? Why, I was... Well, now that you mention it, what was I expecting to do?
Margot, we're dealing with a desperate man. Do you realize what might be waiting for you down there?
Mr. Cranston, he's down in the tunnel, all right. The elevator was at the bottom of the shaft when I came back from dinner.
Berkey, what can he do to the tunnel?
Well, he could set a time bomb and blow it to pieces.
Well, let's go.
Where?
We're going down into the tunnel, Margot, on a manhunt. You better wait here.
All alone?
We won't be going long.
Uh-uh, not me. I'd rather go down the tunnel.
All right, then, let's go. Now, where's the elevator, Berkey?
Over this way. I have some boots for you to wear. It's a little muddy down below.
All right. Yeah, step in, Margot.
It's like going down into a coal mine, isn't it?
Margot, have you ever been down in a coal mine?
No, but this is the way I imagine it would be.
Oh.
How deep is this?
What?
This elevator shaft.
About 100 feet or so. Isn't very deep.
Deep enough for me, thanks.
This will take us down to the tunnel.
What happened?
We've arrived, Margot. That's all.
That's enough.
All right, step out. Look out for the mud and water. Better walk on the planks.
Wait a minute. Flash your light around, Berkey. No one here. All right, lead on, Berkey.
It's a gloomy-looking place, isn't it? Sort of scary, too.
You're just outside the tunnel now.
All right, step in, Margot.
Is this the tunnel?
Not yet, lady. This is the decompression chamber.
Oh, yes, the what? I'm not going in that thing.
It was the only way we can get into the tunnel, Margot.
Well, isn't that the place where those men were... Say, I don't think I'm going to like this.
Come on, Margot. It's too late to back out now.
Well, I'll get in, but it's under protest.
Okay, Berkey. Shut the door.
What's that hissing sound?
That means that air is being pumped into this chamber. We're going under pressure.
No, I don't like it.
Your ears hurt, huh? It's the pressure. You'll get used to it.
I don't intend to get used to it.
It's necessary, Margot. You see, we've got to adjust the pressure in our bodies to the pressure in the tunnel before we can enter it.
Well? Ah, this is the tunnel. The river's right overhead, lady.
Oh, it's so dark.
Can you give us some light, Berkey? I wouldn't want someone sneaking up behind me in the dark. Yeah, that's better.
Goodness, it's muddy down here.
Now what, Mr. Berkey?
Now we'll take a look around.
Knowing you, Lamont, certainly gets me into the darndest places.
You're not sorry, are you?
No, but I do wish
Hey,
that...
look. I'm going back to the decompression chamber to see that whoever it is don't try to slip out while you're looking toward the center of the tunnel.
That's a good idea. We'll go on ahead. Come on, Margot.
Lamont, do you think that was such a good idea?
What?
Sending him back to guard the exit. Suppose whoever it is down here overpowers him and locks us in.
Don't be silly, Margot. That couldn't happen. Berkey's no...
The lights, they've gone out.
Berkey! Berkey, what's wrong? Berkey! Come on, Margot. We've got to get out of here.
I can't see anything, Lamont. I can't run in the dark.
Over this way, Margot. Here, give me a hand.
All right.
Here's the door. Let us out of here! Berkey! Berkey!
I don't think he can help us now. Will, what are we going to do?
I guess we'll have to wait until someone comes and lets us out.
That's a pleasant thought. I don't relish spending a night in this place. What's that?
It sounds like a phone.
Down here?
Yeah, a foreman probably uses it to speak to his boss above ground.
Well, where is it?
Well, the sound came from... Oh, there it is. Hello?
Well, Mr. Cranston, I guess this'll teach you not to poke your nose into something that doesn't concern you.
Who is this?
Makes no difference now, Mr. Cranston. You're gonna die. You hear me? Die.
Brantley, listen to me. I don't care about myself, but surely you won't do this to a woman.
Sorry, I can't oblige you, but she's got to go too. Now I'm gonna step up the pressure in the tunnel till your eardrums crack. Up, up it'll go until the whole tunnel will explode just like a punctured balloon. The river will rush in and you'll be drowned like rats in a trap.
Hello? Hello? Oh, he's hung up.
What is it, Lamont? Oh, the lights. The lights are on again.
Margot, I've got something to say to you, and it's not going to be easy.
Yes, Lamont?
This is the end for us. We're going to die here in this hole, Margot.
Lamont, I'm not afraid to die.
Margot, all I can say is I know now that I've been right about you.
Thanks, Lamont. Is it Brantley?
I don't know, Margot. I think so.
Lamont, what's that?
I'm afraid he's going to carry out his threat. He's going to increase the pressure till it blows this tunnel to bits.
Well, if this is to be the last few minutes I'm going to spend on this earth, I'm at least going to be gay about it. I'm not going out with a frown on my face.
And a very lovely face it is, too, Margot.
Why, Lamont, do you realize it's practically the first compliment you've ever paid me?
Well, it just proves what a stuffy guy I've been.
Oh, a pretty swell guy, if anyone should ask. There's never been a dull moment on our merry-go-round.
We have had great times together, haven't we?
I wouldn't trade them for anything, Lamont. Oh, Lamont, oh, my ears hurt. My head.
Yeah. I know, Margot. Pressure's going up very rapidly. I guess he wants to finish us off in a hurry.
Oh, it's so warm and damp down here.
Yeah. Pressure must be up pretty high now. We won't have long to wait.
The air... The air's getting so misty.
Margot.
What is it, Lamont?
Margot. In a minute, that weak part of the tunnel up there, the part that hasn't been reinforced, is going to give way. The river's going to rush in. If we climb up this framework here, we'll be able to hold out longer.
Well, what difference will that make?
I don't know, Margot, but come on. Let's climb.
All right, Lamont. If it'll make you any happier.
Here. Give me a hand. I'll help you. Come on.
Lamont, help!
Look out! There it goes!
Well, Commissioner Weston, we pumped all the water out of the tunnel. Found no trace of Margot or Lamont's bodies. They must have been washed into the river.
Yeah. You know, they were both personal friends of mine, too.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Well, that's the way it goes.
Lamont was trying to help me. I was going to give up the whole job, Commissioner, but now I'm going ahead with it. If he thought that much of me, I... Well...
Yeah, I understand. Well, now tell me about this Pop Berkey.
Well, it's simple enough. I found Pop myself. He was just outside the tunnel, unconscious from a blow on his head.
How long have you known him?
Well, he and my dad broke into sand hogging together. Later, when a tunnel accident made Berkey unfit for work underground, Dad always found a job for him up above.
Ah.
And, well, I sort of followed in Dad's footsteps.
Well, this whole business proves one thing. That so-called accident in the tunnel where the 8 men were killed was no accident. I'll have my man stationed at the tunnel tomorrow when you go back to work.
Oh, I'd appreciate it, Commissioner Weston.
That's all right. You know, I'm going to miss that fellow Cranston. Stockton, do you mind if I stay here a while and look this room over?
No, not at all, Commissioner Weston. I've got to go down below in the tunnel and talk to the men. If anything happens this time...
Nothing's going to happen, Mr. Stockton. Not while I'm here. Good luck, son.
Good luck. Yeah, thanks.
Commissioner Weston.
Huh? What?
It's the Shadow, Commissioner.
The Shadow? Well, my friend, what are you doing here?
I'm here to help you catch the murderer. That's what you're here for, isn't it?
Yeah, sure, sure. But who is he?
Softly, Commissioner, softly. You wouldn't want to scare our murderer away, would you?
Is he here?
Very close now. In just a moment, he'll come into this room. This is what he's been waiting for. You see, the lives of the men in the tunnel depend on the proper functioning of the pump machinery here. The murderer will attempt to destroy the pump and kill the men down in the tunnel. This is to be his final job. For today, for the first time, Peter Stockton is down below.
Well, he won't get away with it.
Quiet, Commissioner. I think this is our man now. Quick, hide behind the machinery.
Yeah, right.
Here it is, the main induction valve. Now, Mr. Stockton, you're going to pay for what your father did to me.
Weston, stop him!
Try and stop me!
I'll stop you, all right! Well, let's see who it is. Why, it's Pop Berkey. I've killed old Pop Berkey.
No, Commissioner. He'll live to pay for his crimes.
We've come to be witnesses.
Now, wait, what? Cranston and you, Miss Lane, I thought you were...
Yes, I know, Commissioner, but
Well, aren't you glad to see us?
Oh, of course. But how did you get out? Where have you been? What are you... You were in the tunnel, weren't you?
One question at a time, Commissioner. We were in the tunnel, all right, but we escaped.
Escaped?
Yes, we climbed to the top of the tunnel just before the blow-off came.
You climbed?
There was an air pocket, a very wonderful air pocket.
Don't forget the details, Margot.
Oh, yes, I ruined a perfectly good pair of stockings.
Oh, that's... But how did you get out?
Through the escape chamber. Berkey had forgotten all about that.
But Lamont hadn't. He found it, didn't you, Lamont? Right at the top of the tunnel. Let me tell you something, Commissioner. Yeah? If you ever get stuck in a tunnel, have Lamont along.
Well, I still don't understand it.
What about Berkey?
He confessed everything last night. It seems he hated Stockton because he thought Stockton's father was responsible for his accident. Also, because Stockton's father married the woman he loved. Couldn't get even with his old man, so he was going to take it out on the son. Then he tried to implicate Brandley to shield himself.
Well, I guess you've got all the evidence you need, Commissioner, so Margot and I'll be running along.
Wait a minute. I'm not through with you two yet. Why didn't you let people know that you were safe?
Because, Commissioner, we couldn't resist satisfying a lifelong ambition.
What's that?
Reading our own obituaries.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by The Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The Shadow Magazine is on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Pretty great story, if you ask me. If you remember from my introduction, this was one of the stories that was on that first CD I bought in 1996 from eBay. I loved it then, and I love it now. The Shadow is one of the most popular radio shows in history. It went on the air in August of 1930. A figure never seen, only heard, The Shadow was an invincible crime fighter. He possessed many gifts which enabled him to overcome any enemy. Besides his tremendous strength, he could defy gravity, speak any language, unravel any code, and become invisible with his famous ability to cloud men's minds. The series ran from 1930, where he was a character on a radio anthology program, to 1954, when the show ran its last episode titled Murder by Sea on December 26th of that year. If you do the math, that's 24 years of stories. How about that?
As read by Amazing Stories, read by amazing people.
This time on As Read By, we have a story about how things bad can become something good. It first appeared in Analog Magazine, September of 1962, and is titled Beyond Pandora. The ideal way to deal with a pest is, of course, to make it useful to you.
The doctor's pen paused over the chart on his desk. This is your third set of teeth, I believe? His patient nodded. That's right, doctor. But they were pretty slow coming in this time. The doctor looked up quizzically. Is that the only reason you think you might need a booster shot? Oh no, of course not. The man leaned forward and placed one hand, palm up, on the desk. Last year I had an accident. Stupid. Lost a thumb. He shrugged apologetically. It took almost 6 months to grow back. Thoughtfully, the doctor leaned back in his chair. I see. As the man before him made an involuntary movement toward his pocket, the doctor smiled. Go on. Smoke if you want to. Picking up the chart, he murmured. 6 months. Much too long. Strange we didn't catch that at the time. He read silently for a few moments, then began to fill out a form clipped to the folder. Well, I think you probably are due for another booster about now. There will have to be the usual tests. Not that there's much doubt. We like to be certain. The middle-aged man seemed relieved. Then, on second thought, he hesitated uneasily. Why? Is there any danger? Amusement flickered across the doctor's face, then turned smoothly into a reassuring half-smile. Oh no, there's absolutely no danger involved. None at all. We have tissue regeneration pretty well under control now. Still, I'm sure you understand that accurate records and data are very necessary for further research and progress. Reassured, the patient thawed and became confidential. I see. Well, I suppose it's kind of silly, but I don't much like shots. It's not that they hurt. It's just that I guess I'm old-fashioned. I still feel kind of creepy about the whole business. Slightly embarrassed, he paused and asked defensively, "Is that unusual?" The doctor smiled openly now. "Not at all, not at all. Things have moved pretty fast in the past few years. I suppose it takes people's emotional reactions a while to catch up with developments that, logically, we accept as a matter of fact." He pushed his chair back from the desk. "Maybe it's not too hard to understand. Take fire, for example. Man lived in fear of fire for a good many 100,000 years, and rightly so, because he hadn't learned to control it. The principle's the same. First, you learn to protect yourself from a thing, then control it, and eventually we learn to harness it for a useful purpose." He gestured toward the man's cigarette. "Even so, man still instinctively fears fire, even while he uses it. In the case of tissue regeneration, where the change took place so rapidly, in just a generation or so, that instinctive fear is even more understandable, although quite as unjustified, I assure you." The doctor stood up, indicating that the session was ending. While his patient scrambled to his feet, hastily putting out his cigarette, the physician came around the desk. He put his hand on the man's shoulder. "Relax. Take it easy. Nothing to worry about. This is a wonderful age we live in. Barring a really major accident, there's no reason you shouldn't live at least another 75 years. After all, that's a very remarkable viral complex we have doing your repair work." As they walked to the door, the man shook his head. "Guess you're right, Doc. It's certainly done a good job so far, and I guess you specialists know what you're doing, even if folks don't understand it." At the door, he paused and half turned to the doctor. "But say, something I meant to ask you. This stuff, or this vaccine, where did it come from? Seems to me I heard somewhere that way back before you fellows got it tamed, it was something else. Dangerous. There was another name for it. Do you know what I mean?" The doctor's hand tightened on the doorknob. "Yes, I know," he said grimly. "But not many laymen remember. Just keep in mind what I told you. With any of these things, the pattern is protection, then control, then useful application." He turned to face his patient. "Back in the days before we put it to work for us, rebuilding tissue, almost ending aging and disease, the active basis for our vaccine caused a whole group of diseases in itself." Returning the man's searching gaze, the doctor opened the door. "You've come a long way since then. You see," he said quietly, "in those days they called it cancer."
That one was written for us by Robert Martin and was expertly read for us by Jerome Lawson. And so ends episode number 481. My thanks go out to Black Windows, Jake Waters, Rich Snyder, Lowell Rice, and Jerome Lawson for their contributions on this one. Couldn't have done it without you. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.